Agent 0010 here for our weekly intel report. And we have to welcome Agent 0010 from deep inside the bowels of the darkest, darkest halls of Washington, D.C. Agent 0010, how are you this morning?
I'm doing good, Rod. How are you?
I am blessed and highly favored, still.
Grooviness. Yeah, and by the way, it always does stink in the bowels, no matter where those bowels are. But yes, in D.C., oh, exceptionally so.
Yes, it does. So what is your report this morning? Do tell.
Okay, today I'm going to talk about a supposed report or rumor that the Russians, the combination of the Russians and the Syrians have gotten together, and they actually captured the ISIS leader, al-Baghdadi. Now, the United States says that there is nothing concrete that proves that this has actually occurred. But let's take a look on something else. Recently, it has been confirmed and reported that ISIS is trying to create some kind of a alliance with al-Qaeda. Now, in the past, people in the press, the mainstream media, and in particular, the United States government, have been saying that ISIS was created in 2014. I've got news for you. I am firsthand proof and knowledge that that is completely and utterly false. They started their offensive in Iraq and then into Syria in 2014. But they started organizing in 2008. Now, al-Baghdadi was located in the city of Mosul in Iraq, northern Iraq, in 2008. And you know what? I'll say it myself. I put in the report. I sent up the information that we had found an organization that was planning against the al-Qaeda or breaking away from the al-Qaeda. I sent up that report to Washington, D.C., and they said that they had to sit on it because of the new incoming administration. Mind you, like I said, this was 2008.
Yeah, this was just before.
This is when President Barack Obama, exactly,
wasn't president yet.
Yeah, no, it wasn't. But they had to wait to see what the new incoming administration was going to do. Well, they sat on this information, and when the new administration finally did come in, the information was then given to the White House. The reply that I received: can we use these guys to go up against al-Qaeda? My response was, oh, hell no. Right here they're saying that the West is the devil, that they want to kill, that they want to create more havoc than al-Qaeda has, that al-Qaeda just waits for too long in between attacks, that they have other ideas, that they can reach out to their Muslim brothers and sisters that believe that the West is the devil, that they believe that the West is going to be the downfall of Islam, that they are the heathens, they are the infidels that must be destroyed and brought down underfoot. And I kept pointing this out. They said, no, but they have politicians. We can talk to them. Well, needless to say, I was pulled off that mission. I was pulled off the mission. I was working on a different mission when I found this information. I found all this stuff out, and I was pulled out of everything and sat behind a desk and told to shut the hell up.
Well, didn't it?
Now let's be for
clear disclosure here. Didn't Al Qaeda itself really form out of the Mujahideen, which we helped against the Russians in the 80s and 90s in their Afghanistani war?
What happened during when the Russians finally pulled out of Afghanistan? There were different factions of the Mujahideen. And what was going on is they were basically running through the entire country of Afghanistan, running rampant, raping, pillaging, doing all kinds of atrocities. And they were fighting amongst each other, and they were getting the innocent Afghan women and children or Afghan citizens involved in this crossfire. So people were dying left and right, and there were atrocities being committed. Then all of a sudden, one imam said enough is enough. He gathered a small army and started sweeping through Afghanistan, defeating most of the factions of the Mujahideen. So There were a few factions in northern Afghanistan that managed to fight back, resist, and repel. But the fact still remains is that this imam became the leader of Afghanistan. That is actually how it happened. Now, all of a sudden, now you have this imam declaring that the West is the infidel. In comes Osama bin Laden, and he says, listen, I can form a new army. I can form a small army. I just need your permission to stay here and form this group. The new Afghan government at that time said, fine, come on in. And this is where history decided to take a very ugly course. And so if you said part of the Mujahideen, yes and no, because there were different factions of the Mujahideen running all through Afghanistan, especially after the Russians had been pulled out of there. Now, the situation that we have today is that after I was sat behind a desk and told to shut the hell up, then the president decided, well, we're going to start pulling troops out. We're going to pull troops out. We're going to leave Iraq. We're going to leave Iraq. Now, mind you, notice which country did ISIS storm through first? Iraq. Because we pulled all our troops out. The previous administration, and I'm not going to say exactly what I think of the previous administration, gave them roughly, okay, 6 years. Now, they're saying that ISIS was formed in 2014. Again, this is false because, well, as soon as the troops pulled out, they started sweeping through Iraq or northern Iraq. And the only thing that was really repelling them in certain areas of Iraq were the Kurds, the Kurdish fighters, not the PKK, which is a terrorist organization that's formed by the Kurds, but the Kurdish fighters, freedom fighters, the real fighters. Now, they started sweeping through Iraq. You don't do that. You don't form an army. You don't get weapons. You don't get vehicles in a week, especially for thousands of people. You don't do that. That is impossible. Unless they have another country completely and utterly supporting them and saying, oh yeah, everything will be delivered in 2 weeks. Just make sure all your soldiers get their equipment. But they didn't have that. Even Iran didn't want anything to do with them. So therefore, they had 6 years because the previous administration put a time stamp on when troops would be pulled out of Iraq. So they said, really? Okay, that's how long we have to train them. That's how long we have to equip them. That's how long we have to plan our strategy on how we're going to sweep through this area. Now, it is basically a tradition, you might say, that a caliphate, like let's say during the Crusades, you had a leader who was like a political figurehead. And then supporting that leader was a high-ranking or highly respected imam or holy man. So the imam would say, this leader has the blessings of Allah. Why? Because he is bringing forth the word of Allah. He is bringing it to the infidel. He is crushing the infidel. And he is doing it in the same way that the great prophet has done it, by sweeping through and destroying and brushing aside the infidel, as the great prophet had done with his army. So he has the blessings of Allah. Well, nowadays, they really don't have that kind of leader. They have generals that lead the army, but the general is doing it for the sake of the holy man. Now the holy man has become the caliphate. The holy man has become the leader and the political figurehead of this organization. So in order for ISIS to go and actually conduct some kind of a negotiation with Al-Qaeda, who at one point in time they despised because they weren't doing enough, something happened. Something had happened for them to say, hey, let's join forces. Let's do this together. Now, the final outcome, they both wanted the same final outcome, but the methodology that was used was completely and totally polar opposite of each other. So therefore, something must have happened for ISIS to finally capitulate and say to the Al-Qaeda, we want to join forces with you. They lost something precious. They lost something valuable. and that could be their caliphate, their leader, their general, al-Baghdadi. So the pieces, if you put them together in that way, make complete and total sense. But let's say al-Baghdadi was still in the picture, and then the ISIS on the al-Qaeda leadership is still in place. They're going to butt heads. They're going to have issues with each other. They're going to have difficulties. Unless if al-Baghdadi is still in power and his overall scheme is to take over al-Qaeda by eliminating his opponent, that's a possibility as well. But that possibility is not as great as actually looking for a new leadership, a new imam, a new holy man, for them to follow his orders. So therefore, to me, the possibility that al-Baghdadi has been captured by the Russians and the Syrians is very great. But let's take a look at the aspect of the Russians and the Syrians. They could be lying, because the fact is, the truth is that the Russians have not been bombing ISIS-held positions. That has been done by the Americans. And it's been the Kurds that have been taking on ISIS on the ground. It has not been the Russians. It has not been the Syrians. They're too busy dealing with the rebels that supposedly are allied with ISIS, which is completely and totally false, because those rebels happen to be the Kurds. To me, I hate to say this, I have a tendency of believing what the Russians might be saying about actually having al-Baghdadi in power, in their possession. To me, that's the greater possibility of all of them.
I've always said this is a mess. You've got three sides in this. So whenever you have three sides, it's never a... We're used to fighting wars, us against them. But now it's the us against them and them, who's also them are against the other them. And those them are against us. It's a circular, it's a triangular mess. And you can't seem to get any real accurate information. So we go in and we bomb Syria because we support the rebels. The rebels remember what we did to the Kurds in Iraq back after after Desert Storm. They're not fully trusting of the Americans. And then you've got ISIS, which is now aligning itself with al-Qaeda. Al-Qaeda is a totally different faction that we've had to deal with that has poked its head up every once in a while since we took over Afghanistan. So there are a number. What is it going to take in order for, let's say, the Western sides? And I know this is probably never going to happen because, for whatever reason, we don't like Assad, but the Russians do. So there isn't going to be a coming to terms on that. So what else is there that they're possibly working on in order to clear out at least ISIS and prevent al-Qaeda from gaining power again?
Well, there's more than three sides, to be honest with you. You have ISIS, you have the Kurds, you have the United States. Then you have Russia, Syria, Iran. They're all involved. So now we have five sides, and none of them really trust each other. Syria is dependent upon Russia, but nobody trusts Iran because Iran has their own motivations. Nobody trusts the United States because of, like what you said, what they had done to the Kurds at the end of Desert Storm. But not only that, but when the Kurds actually turned to the United States and said, hey, just give us some kind of weapons, well, guess what? We can't do that either because one of our NATO allies, which happens to be Turkey, is having difficulties with the Kurds, and they're afraid that any weapons that we may give the Kurdish military is going to fall into the hands of the PKK, which is in northern Iraq and southern Turkey, and they're conducting terrorist activities against the Turkish government and the Turkish people. So, yeah, it's a sticky wicket. What needs to happen is that people need to sit down at a table and say, okay, this is what's going to happen. Let's give this a shot. You're worried about this. Put up a boundary. Nobody crosses south of that boundary, so that way no planes, no soldiers, nothing crosses south of that boundary. All the war is going to happen to the north. So that way any actual Syrian civilians can safely go to the south of Syria where they can be safe, where they can set up a refugee camp, where their own country and their own countrymen can reach out and help them and assist them, and all the Kurds and all the fighting will happen up north. That's point one. Point two, what needs to happen is that Russia needs to start doing airstrikes against ISIS. Because
there's a new twist to all of this now, because Erdogan, who isn't exactly friends of the West, is quickly seizing dictatorial power in Turkey. And we already know that he's not friends of the Russians. He's already shot down one of their planes. And he's no friend of the West, but he doesn't like the Kurds, and he doesn't seem to like ISIS. So what side is he going to be on?
His own. He doesn't give a damn about anybody else but his own side, about his own interest. When this supposed revolution, temporary or short-lived revolution, had occurred in Turkey, I thought it was awfully convenient that just as his plane left the safety of a compound or safety of a resort that he happened to be located on, just as this was happening, now mind you, if you're in Turkish military, you're a high-ranking official in the Turkish military, you will have access to intelligence, and you're going to know that the president of Turkey is off at a resort, and that's the first thing you're going to hit. But that never happened. He conveniently was at a resort in southern Turkey, away from the capital, and the Turkish military that was supposedly leading this revolt against him didn't bother getting the intelligence to know where he was going to be at, and they didn't bother hitting that resort to eliminate him first and foremost, and then going in and taking over Ankara, which is the capital of Turkey. None of that happened. So to me, the entire thing was set up. And mind you, the Turkish soldiers that were in Ankara during this whole supposed revolution, these weren't regular soldiers. And they weren't. They were far from special forces. Because what people don't seem to know is that Turkey, just like Israel and other countries in that region, have conscripts. In other words, you have to do mandatory service in the Turkish military. These guys weren't actually volunteers. They were conscripted in. They had to do their service. These are guys that did not want to be in the military, but they had to do it because it was the law. So therefore, they're put on guard duty. They're put up on cleaning details, and they make crap for pay. In fact, their families have to support them while they're serving in the Turkish military. That's who these soldiers were. They weren't the best of the best. They were there because they had to be there. So therefore, they were used as cannon fodder.
It is it is worse than I originally thought out there. It is definitely a quagmire. Well, I got to run, my friend. It's always interesting. This is interesting stuff. Maybe we can do a follow-up on this next week as things unfold. And, we'll, of course, we'll try to bring in the Norks into this thing, too, as well.
Hey, as always, easier done than said.
Yes. Be safe out there, my friend. Good. Hope you're gaining on the book.
Thank you so much. And you have a great one.
You too. We'll be back, folks.